and had a tiny stream covering the perimeter of it. Antonio and Luther were standing side by side, staring through the glass of the aviary at the trees and animals and other plants. I was already thinking what Antonio was thinking before he said it.
"It's such a peaceful place."
He was still gazing through the glass.
"I come here whenever an emotion overwhelms me, so I thought this would be an extremely good place for me to speak with you tonight. I can imagine you might be quite overwhelmed."
Reaching his side, I grumbled, "Not you as well." He laughed at that, as did Luther.
"You know, if a number of people are interested in your emotional state, maybe you should consider this a good thing. It shows that you are finally accepted and cared about."
"It might be a good thing to someone else, but I'm not really a let's-hold-hands-cuddle-and-share-all person." He laughed again.
"Maybe one day you will learn that it is not a fault to care."
Turning to face me, his expression all business now, he continued,
"My guards have never failed to protect me. They would have reached Victor before he was able to reach me."
"I know."
"And yet you intervened in spite of that."
It was half question, half statement. "I did."
"I would not go as far as to say that I owe you my life, because I do not believe that it was ever truly in danger. But your intervention was much appreciated, and I thank you for it." "You also have my appreciation," said Luther.
The guards mumbled something like, "and ours." Sighing, I admitted. "I wouldn't bother thanking me. I didn't really think about it, if I'm honest. I just did it."
"Do you not see that for this to be your natural reaction to my safety being jeopardized is a tremendous thing?"
Antonio regarded me curiously.
"There have only ever been three other people to intervene in such a way. Sebastian and the brothers. None of them intervened by harming their sires. You have known me for all of a few nights, and yet you not only instinctually protected me, but you killed your own sire in order to do so."
I smiled. "Maybe you didn't notice that he was a prick who I had no time or respect for."
"He was still your sire, Sam, and just like any human would have that small moment of doubt before harming either of their parents, any vampire experiences this before trying to harm their sire. Most vampires never do it, no matter the circumstances. A blood bond is overpowering for the mind. And yet, you did not experience that moment of hesitation."
I bowed my head. "Cold-hearted, I suppose."
"No," he insisted gently. "You are not cold-hearted. Harsh at times, yes, but only if you believe it is necessary. Foul-mouthed on occasion, yes, but we don't mind that so much. Capable of brutal honesty, oh, yes, but sometimes the absolute truth is what people need to hear. You are not cold, Sam. Do not ever think that about yourself. Consider that an order."
"Sir, yes, sir," I said lightheartedly, to which he rolled his eyes.
"I did not call you here just to inquire about your well-being or to thank you."
He made his way to a bench beside one of the walls. I hadn't even noticed that until then. The beauty of the aviary had taken up all of my focus, and invited me to sit beside him. "Are you giving me a raise?" I teased.
"You could say that."
I wasn't expecting that to be his response.
"As I told you before, you are not the only individual to have intervened to protect me. In each of those cases, I called them to me, just as I have called you now. I believe in thanking people with actions more than with words. Rewards, you might say."
"Okay. Does he mean, like, a medal or something?"
"I am a bestower, Sam. That is my vampiric gift. Have you ever encountered a bestower before?"
"No, but I've heard of them. You can pass on gifts to other vampires."
"Not exactly. I can impart power to a vampire, not a gift of my choice. That is different. It can only be done at my control, but I cannot control what reaction the power has to your own innate concentration of power. In other words, I do not know what gift you will then develop, but it will most likely not be my own."
"Wow, I hadn't seen that coming.
It is your decision, Sam. I know that you already have a substantial gift to control, so it is understandable if you do not want another. But if you would like to accept my offer, I would be very happy to reward you in such a way.
The idea of having another gift was exciting. Even the idea that I'd have no idea what it would be was exciting. But it had taken me a while to have the control that I now had over my gift. This wasn't exactly the best time to be struggling with another one, considering that the Hollow's walls would be attacked in a few weeks. Will I be able to control it? I mean, I can control other vampires' gifts easily enough, because it's just about channeling energy, and I'm a master at that. I have to be. But when I absorb some of Jared's energy... Antonio raised his brows at that, but he didn't comment. I couldn't get a grip on the teleporting thing.
That is because you couldn't control it, explained Antonio. Teleporting is not as simple as people might think. It is a lot like being a satellite. Your mind picks up and commits to memory the signals and coordinates of places or people, all on a totally subconscious level. For Jared, his initial struggles were due to his inexperience at channeling energy. For you, the problem is obviously that you did not absorb the amount of his energy required to receive enough of the concentration of that power. As such, you are, through no fault of your own, an incomplete satellite.
Oh. Right. Well, that was good news.
So, do you wish to accept my offer?
He was eager, I could tell. Probably curious as to what gift I'd end up with. I had to admit I was extremely curious myself, and curiosity killed the kitten in this instance. What do I have to do? Antonio smiled pleasantly and exchanged a pleased expression with Luther before returning his attention to me.
You will need to join your forehead to mine. It might feel a little strange, sort of like a sizzling sensation, but do not withdraw from it. The process is not something I can control. It depends on the reaction that the power I impart has on you. It can take anything from 30 seconds to an entire minute.
I nodded. Okay. Although I was a little hesitant due to the shock and weirdness of it all, I didn't let it show. Antonio closed his eyes. Seconds later, he spoke.
I am ready for you.
I almost laughed as that unintentionally sounded a little kinky. Slowly I leaned in. When my forehead met his, there was the strangest bang inside my body. I guess that Antonio felt it too, because he gasped.
Antonio,
said Luther, sounding concerned. I took it that the bang wasn't normal.
All is well, Luther, he assured him. Sam, do not fear. Be still.
Remaining still had to be one of the hardest things I'd ever done. It was the freakiest thing. It felt as though bugs were crawling under the skin of Antonio's forehead and bursting out, scraping their way through the skin of my own. Then there was this almost unbearable feeling of bubbles bursting inside my skull. My limbs burned. My heart went 10 to the dozen, my lungs pained, my stomach ached, and God, I was so thirsty all of a sudden. It felt like forever before all of it, as abruptly as it had started, ended with one more bang, which made us break apart.
Oh my God, what was all that?
I was wheezing. Luther thrust NSTs in mine and Antonio's hands. So efficient. I gulped it down so quickly I didn't even taste it. My throat stopped aching then.
It would be fair to say that my power has never had such an enthusiastic reaction before to the process of bestowing,
explained Antonio, after reservedly drinking his NST. That was enthusiastic.
The pain and the discomfort are normal. The explosion-type sensation we had at the beginning was not. That was my power, literally bursting with enthusiasm to enter you.
Why so enthusiastic? Antonio looked to Luther, who for once seemed to have no answer. Eventually, Antonio theorized.
Perhaps because your own concentration of power was so great, it massively attracted my own.
I took an inventory of my entire self. I don't feel any different.
It may actually take a few weeks for the gift to manifest itself, just as it does for a vampire's natural gift to emerge, said Lutha. I must say, I am eager to see what it will be.
Antonio smiled at him.
As am I.
Turning back to me, he asked,
Do you feel able to return to work this evening?
That's where I'm going now. I rose from the bench. Hopefully the gift doesn't pop up then, or God knows what I might end up doing to the boys. An evil smile surfaced. That would be the most perfect excuse to beat them senseless, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, and Sam, there is one last thing before you go, called Antonio casually as I reached the door.
What's that?
When the attack happens on the Hollow, I'd like you and Jared to lead the squad together.
I spun on the spot. Say again. Chapter 7 Sam Entering the training arena, I almost dropped dead with shock, which would be a hard thing for an immortal to do. Inside, stretching and gabbing and laughing at dirty jokes, was every single one of the recruits. No sulky or irritated expressions, no lazy postures, no yawns or groans, not even any signs that they were angry with me after I dug into their past and hit them with it. In fact, they all seemed eager and raring to start. I giggled, which made them all turn.
Did someone mistakenly tell you lot that I'll be doing this topless or something?
Naked, I heard, joked one of them.
It might have been Harvey. Max flashed me his usual smile. No hint of last night's flirtatiousness in it, which was good. Like most people, I wanted my personal life and work life separate as far as possible.
We're big boys. We can admit that we were wrong about you.
Chico nodded and gave me a look that was both apologetic and respectful.
If you're someone who can kill your sire to protect Antonio, then there are things I can learn from you. And you're the kind of person I would listen to.
There were murmurs of agreement from Denny, David, Salem, and Reuben.
Plus, you've got a great body, and I'm starting to get sexually confused being around guys all the time, said Damien,
appreciating my navy jeans and my pink top that came attached to a white vest, covering my cleavage a little better. Needless to say, I'd picked this when Fletcher and I went shopping. He'd begged me not to buy it.
And you were right, said Butch. We let ourselves get caught up in the high of being picked for the Legion and thought we were the best thing since sliced bread. So where do you want us, and what do you want us to do?
Asked Stuart. I snorted.
Well, first of all, the lot of you can stop the friendliness and flirting. I'm not your mate, I'm not here for you to ogle at, and I'm not here to joke with you. I'm here to train you.
They all nodded and in unison said, Yes, Commander. Was I dreaming?
Oh, no, you can drop the commander. I can't stand it.
But I wasn't going to let them call me by my first name, either.
How about coach, suggested Denny.
The others seemed to approve of that. I considered it for a moment. In terms of being someone who people would listen to, it was kind of the middle ground. People tended to respect coaches or trainers and have better relationships with them than what they did with people who marched around and barked orders.
Coach it is, I decided. I won't be sending you off doing cross-country or any physical exercises. That's Commander Michael's department. All I will be concentrating on is aiding you with your gifts. Now, considering that you're all lazy sods, it'd be stupid of me to assume any of you have been practicing on your own time.
They didn't deny it.
Right then, let's deal with all that excess energy, because until you learn to channel it, I can't teach you how to use your full potential and make use of it in combat.
They reminded me of a rugby team getting ready to play, with the way they were getting rid of any cricks in their necks and bouncing a little on the spot.
I'm going to give you all individual coaching, but do not mistake this as an insinuation that you only look out for number one. The point is to all become stronger as a squad. But you can only do this by first improving yourselves individually. Also, you will need to know each other's gifts inside and out. There might be a situation one of you can't handle, but another can by, for instance, paralyzing an enemy's senses or by mimicking a certain animal. It'll also mean that if you see one of you in deep shit with an enemy, You'll know whether their gift will mean they can protect themselves or whether someone needs to intervene. What's more, you'll know exactly who the best person to intervene would be. All of that clear to you?
Yes, coach, they all said. God, their compliance was weird.
Just to be sure that having your eyes almost glued to my cleavage isn't making everything I've said fly right over your heads, someone tell me the first goal. Max immediately said,
to work out how to channel all the energy so there's none leaking out.
I nodded. Good. Someone give me the next one.
To improve our use of our powers so we can improve as a squad, shouted Butch.
Good. One more.
To know each other's powers in and out, offered Reuben.
Well, what do you know? You lot actually do listen, I said, smiling wide. After you've reached all those goals, we can start looking at formations. But for now, let's tackle the first goal. Denny?
Instantly, the animal mimic stepped forward. His baby face made me want to take it easy on him. It wouldn't have the same effect on an enemy, but it might very well make them underestimate him. I stood opposite him, arms folded over my chest.
Right, what animal-like tricks have you got?
Well, I have a sting. At will, I can make a poisonous needle appear out of the top of my right index finger.
Okay, what effect does that have?
It doesn't really cause much harm, but it can make you itch like crazy. And I mean crazy.
So, in combat, would you say it would be distracting?
Definitely, he assured me, widening his eyes to emphasize his answer. All you can think about is the itching.
That's good. What else?
I can make my body go as soft as liquid, and then, obviously, back to hard again, like the sea cucumber, so I can be mush and wiggle through little cracks or anything like that.
Interesting, I drawled. So it's slightly similar to how Stuart can shred into molecules and then reassemble himself.
Denny nodded.
I can ooze slime out of my pores, too. It's the most amazing slime. I can wrap someone in it and suffocate them. A little like with hagfish.
I'm impressed. Anything else?
It can jump higher than you can believe,
Harvey spouted out. I twirled and raised a brow at Harvey.
I can't remember asking you anything, so pipe down. You'll get your minute in the spotlight in a sec, big boy.
I had to think of this as a classroom of students. Let one get away with something and they'll all try it, and then before you know it, you're at risk of losing total control of the students. I turned back to Denny.
As you were saying...
Yeah, I can jump really high. Better than a frog. About as good as a copepod.
You can accelerate as fast as 500 body lengths per sec when you jump.
He nodded.
Wow.
I'm not too crazy about the last one.
All the blokes started chuckling quietly, so I knew this had to be embarrassing for Denny. He closed his eyes as he confessed.
I can release an anal musk, like a skunk.
I couldn't help wanting to laugh. Not at Denny, it was just the shock of what he'd said.
I didn't laugh, of course, but the other recruits all did, which was a shitty thing to do as they already knew about it, just as they knew just how embarrassed he felt. It was hard not to be protective of the baby-faced boy. So I got an idea.
Show me.
Sorry, said Denny.
I just want to know how bad it is. You can test it on your friends there.
I heard an, oh, hell no, and a, no way, and a, not a chance.
I turned to look at them.
It wasn't a request. Every one of you has just been giggling like a schoolgirl at Denny here. So why shouldn't he get to have a good laugh? Tit for tat.
Oh, come on, coach, we were just laughing, said Damien. You gotta admit it's funny.
All of you, line up by the eastern wall, I ordered.
Coach, please, don't be tight, begged Max. We laugh no more, promised Reuben.
Unfortunately for you lot, I am unmoved. Either you walk over there yourselves or I'll air blast all of you over there.
Grumbling and whining and holding their noses, they all lined up.
Chuckling, Denny said to me quietly,
You're just kidding, right? You don't really want me to do it.
Oh, I do. See, I had a skunk do it to me once, and I know it's bad. I promise you, Denny, if you do this now, they'll never laugh about this again. Think of it as a learning experience for them.
Yeah, a learning experience, he agreed,
working up the nerve to go do it. Sucking in a mound of air, he added.
It's for their own good.
I nodded. Exactly. Then I patted him on the back. Go, boy, go. And don't be shy about how much musk you let go. All the other recruits were sending me pleading expressions, begging for mercy. I'll just stand right over here, I think. I backed up against the wall opposite them.
Come on, coach, said Max. We won't laugh again, we swear.
Too right you won't, I assured him. Not after this. Denny was now in front of them, facing me. Smiling, he, well, farted, I suppose. And then every single recruit, other than Denny, who it seemed could take the smell of his own lethal fart, were on their knees, coughing and gagging and scrubbing their eyes. I could get a whiff of it from where I was, but as I hadn't been in the line of fire, you could say, I was able to take it standing. Denny was giddy when he came back to my side.
Cool or what?
Very. We both stared at the grown men on their knees studiously, as though they were a science experiment. I have to admit that after the way they all behaved toward me, I'm really enjoying this.
Me too, he chuckled. You know, I really am sorry about the way we were.
I just smiled at him. Eventually they all recovered and walked dozily back over to myself and Denny. Hi, welcome back. Their expressions were priceless. Now, I think you're all expertly familiar with what Denny can do. What I want to know, Denny, is which of your gifts you have a problem controlling or you find to be a bit temperamental.
I'm okay with the jumping and using the sting and the musk and the ooze, but making my body go soft can be a bit time-consuming. I'm not sure if I'd be able to do it faster, but if it's possible, I'd like to.
Well, let's find out. I fed off the energy around him, letting my system breathe it in and revel in it. I could then feel Denny's energy as separate from my own. His was wilder and more potent. Still, I knew exactly how to channel and control it. I let it travel throughout my body until it filled me, hitting even my extremities, and then I let it go. In the space of a second, my body was mush, and then just as quickly, I was solid again.
Yeah, you could do it a lot faster.
Denny's mouth was hanging open rather unattractively.
How do I do it faster? What am I doing wrong?
You're not doing anything wrong with your gift, I spoke to them all then. You're all making the mistake of thinking that this is the same as physical energy, but it's not. It's an unnatural energy that started being produced when you turned and your body evolved. It's produced up here. I poked my head. And that's where you have to dig for it.
But your power comes from your hands, said Stuart.
No, it doesn't. You have to think of a water tank and a hose. I poked my head again. This is the water tank. Your hands, or your breath, I pointed at Chico, can be the hose. Whatever hose you want. I even use my feet when I'm drawing energy from the earth beneath me. Denny uses his arsehole sometimes. Nobody laughed. They didn't want more skunk musk up their noses. The outlet and the water tank are two different things. I saw a few of the recruits exchanging looks that said this made sense, that they couldn't believe it was that obvious, and yet they had never considered it.
Commander Michaels never told us that, griped David,
like a kid looking to blame a teacher for his lack of knowledge. Don't worry, you'll still get your gold star sticker at the end of the session, I told him. He laughed, just as the others did.
What about people like me and David, said Stuart. We don't use outlets, we just kind of will it to happen.
And that's exactly where your problems stem from. You're limiting yourselves. Vampiric gifts don't work off willpower. You don't wish it would happen and then it just does. David, you concentrate hard with your eyes when you send out that blast, right? David nodded. There's the outlet you've been using without even realizing it. Stuart, didn't it occur to you that when you shred into tiny little molecules, that is how the energy is being released? That it bursts out of you? He tilted his head.
Huh.
Didn't it occur to you that shredding could also serve to teleport you around? You can go from place to place as molecules. I turned back to Denny. Now, I want you to close your eyes. He did. Think about nothing but that water tank. All the water swilling around in there, wanting to get out so that more can replace it. All it needs is a hose. Remember, this is similar to Stuart's gift. But whereas he has to feel the water bursting out of him, you have to think of it bursting inside you, filling you and filling you, drowning you into nothing but... And then he was like a puddle in the space of a second. Mush, I finished. Everyone clapped for him. Now, Denny, you need to think of the water filling you again, stretching you and stretching you until you might burst again. But this time you don't burst. You turn off that hose and leave the water in the tank. It was strange talking to a puddle, and even more strange to think that the puddle could fully understand me. He was mush for a good 10 seconds before speedily reforming. I took that as him concentrating on the water-tank metaphor. Whole again, Denny gazed at me with a cocktail of astonishment, gratitude and respect in his eyes.
Oh my God, I did it! For years I've been trying to control it. I could just kiss you right now.
His face turned serious.
I won't.
All the others reacted in much the same way when I took them aside individually as I'd done with Denny. Chico learned that he could, in fact, use his palms to emit thorns. He just needed to work on emitting more than one thorn at a time and having a better aim. Butch was able to pop up his shield a couple of times. He just needed to learn how to form it at will and how to keep the shield up for the length of time that he wanted. Stuart was now able to shred in the space of 3 seconds and reform again just as quickly. His goal was to learn how to do it within the space of a second, in order to avoid any power directed his way. He also wanted to master how to move around while he was only molecules. Salem, being quite violent, decided that it would be much more fun and dramatic if the outlet for his psychic blow, that could knock you unconscious, could be his fist. After Reuben had weakened his gift so that the blow felt more like a slap, I let him practice on Damien, who was being a lazy little sod. Damien's low concentration span meant he was still having trouble with trying to project his astral self any further than a few feet. But after a while of getting psychic slaps from Salem, he, in utter desperation, was able to astral project away from the impact. Sometimes learning the hard way was the only way to learn. David had decided that he wanted his outlet to be his palms, not his eyes, so he was working on that and doing excellently. Reuben had weakened his power in advance to ensure that the blast couldn't do any more than give his victim a minor shock. He practiced mostly on Denny, who had said he would happily practice with his own powers in his own time so he could help David. I'd noticed that Denny looked out for him a lot, which was good, as I came to realize that David was very nervous of his power. It turned out that Reuben had a little trouble with controlling whether he strengthened someone's gift or weakened it. But by the end of the session, he had a better hang of it. He was working toward increasing the degree to which he could affect someone's gift, and was being able to affect it with minimal bodily contact, as opposed to holding onto them for up to 8 seconds. Max and Harvey were hard work because both believed that they had nothing left to learn, so I paired them up, which they soon regretted. I first let Slaphead, he was back to that now that he was being a wanker, explore whether he could choose exactly what senses he wanted to affect. He didn't believe this was possible, until, one by one, I took each of his senses away and left him to silently whine about it to the wall. It transpired that, although Harvey was able to send something zooming away with his telekinesis, he couldn't make something rotate or levitate or come toward him. So I allowed him to practice on a practically defenseless Slaphead. He, of course, stole every one of Harvey's senses once he recovered his own, just as payback. Each time the recruits were successful in their attempts, I would give them a nod of approval, but after that would holler, "Again!" And, to their credit, they did it over and over and over. I was tempted to loudly express how pleased I was with their efforts, but they'd most likely interpret signs of kindness as weaknesses, and then start taking the piss. I felt that if I didn't keep a tough exterior, they'd all end up being wankers again. Besides, as Max had said, they were big boys. By the end of the night, they were all exhausted, but they were proud to be tired because they were proud of their efforts. I was actually proud of them, too. I showed this by simply saying in a flat tone, "You did good. You worked hard. But it doesn't end here. You've got goals to hit. Don't lose sight of them." As motivation, I made them a promise. "Once you meet those goals and can master the formations that I have in mind for you to learn, I'll let you practice an attack on one of the other squads." Every one of them grinned. I knew that the other squads teased the newest recruits. It was tradition. It was part of the tough love of the place. Soldier sense of humor was somewhat different. But it pissed these blokes off all the same, just as it would piss me off.
"Oh, yeah, I'll send those shitheads flying through the air," said Harvey. "Then we'll see if they still want to throw eggs at my door."
The recruits all seemed to be cooking up revenge plots as they left the arena, each sure to shout, "See you tomorrow night, coach." And they did see me tomorrow night, and the next night, and the next. Each time they put in maximum effort, never complained at the constant holler of, "Again!" And the improvement was immediate. Jared never knew this, as he never came to observe, not even when I took them out to the rainforest to familiarize themselves with it and do some training there. The night of the bet came and went. Jared made no mention of it at all. Nor did he mention Antonio's order that Jared and I lead the squad together during the attack on the hollow. Antonio had assured me that he was aware of his order, so I decided to wait until Jared brought up the subject before speaking of it. But he didn't broach the subject. He barely mentioned anything to me. Toneless, polite greetings and farewells were all I got these days.
"You're going to have to tell me what's going on, because all the emotions swirling around that office are giving me migraines," whined Fletcher one evening, as he barged past me and into my apartment. As always, he was looking like he'd just stepped out of a fashion magazine.
"Well, hello to you too, Fletch. I'm fine, thanks." He spotted the three empty bottles of vodka-flavored NSTs on my table in front of the sofa, and sighed. His words were gentle but firm.
"Spill the beans, lady."
I sat beside him on the sofa. Well, I flopped down onto it. "Remember the night when Jared and I nearly had a fumble?"
"How could I forget? The pair of you were throwing that much heated passion around that I was sweating cobs and downright bloody horny. Not that Norm was complaining when I got back to the room, mind. I was like a bleeding jungle cat the way I..."
"Fletch, I love you, but could the record please show that I do not want to visualize my friends doing it? Feel free to withhold details like that in future." He rolled his eyes.
"Prude?"
In vampire speed, he retrieved a bundle of NSTs from my refrigerator and returned to the sofa.
"So, you were saying..."
He told me about his consort collection, and then asked me if I'd like to join it. Fletcher's mouth fell open.
"No!"
As of this moment, he was absorbed in the conversation.
"Yes." "The randy bastard! You'd think three were enough. Well, don't keep me in suspense. Tell me what you said."
I told him I didn't want to be a consort again, and I couldn't sleep with someone who collected women, who all live in the same apartment, by the way.
"No."
"Yes." I didn't realize until now just how much this had all got to me. He couldn't seem to wrap his head around that, and he wouldn't let it drop. Then we had another kiss. I'd been absorbing his energy, because I was wiped out from the blood link with Victor being broken, but I couldn't get him to let go of me before I took too much of his energy. So the idea of the kiss was to distract him.
"That'd definitely distract randy old Jared. I'm guessing from that look on your lovely face that it didn't end there."
"Oh, no, it did. I mean, we didn't do anything more than kiss, but the kiss had gotten a bit..."
"Tongue-tastic," he supplied.
"Yeah. So then Jared made his proposition again. I said no again, and we ended up arguing. I don't even know how it got so bad. I mentioned that his brother didn't have a consort, and he seemed to take that as I liked Evan as well. And when I said he saw women as possessions like my sire had, he got all pissed off. Then he told me he'd let it all go, and I could get on with my celibate lifestyle.
Fletcher tilted his head as he considered it all.
So, basically, he's sulking over a bonk.
A bonk that I won't have with him, yeah.
He snorted and adjusted his glasses.
Half his problem is he's too used to getting whatever he wants.
Have you noticed that Joy's been turning up at the office at least once a night?
What? Who?
Oh, you mean that cross between a whippet and a witch?
Personally, I don't know how he can shag something that looks like it's just escaped from Azkaban.
I instantly burst into laughter. Thank God Fletcher had turned up. He always had a way of making everything not seem so bad.
The truth was that it had annoyed the hell out of me that Joy had been turning up the past few nights. She and I did the hello and bye thing, but that was all. Once she'd brought along the other two consorts. Both were Kejas too, and almost as gorgeous as Joy. Daniela had a very Mexican look about her, and a bust that any woman would envy, which completely compensated for the fact that she was dopey beyond comprehension. Tammy was dark-skinned and very voluptuous, but the devious expression that seemed to be fixed on her face kind of negated her beauty. They also helloed and goodbyed me. Daniela actually seemed sincere about it, as opposed to the other two. Their dark grins always made it feel as though they were really saying, "We hate you. Please die." Jared would watch me closely when they were around. No idea why. I took to focusing on whatever documents were in front of me, no matter what they were. I would sooner have left the office altogether, but then it would have looked as though their presence bothered me in some way, and I was not about to let Jared believe that, even though it was true. I had to admit to having a lack of rationality where Jared was concerned, though it made no sense. As such, the whip nearly materialized in my hands a few times when Joy gave him some of those noisy kisses of hers. Whipping her into insensibility would have felt good.
"I wouldn't let her or him bother you, love. Spit him out of your mind. What about that Max bloke? He's all right, and he likes you well enough. Luscious, too."
"Yep, he is," I admitted. Max had continued his flirting and always on his own time, to his credit. I was actually beginning to think that the wanker wasn't all that bad. The way he didn't take life too seriously made him an attractive person to be around. I laughed a lot when he was there.
"Can I ask? I've noticed Evan goes to the office a lot these days. Who is it he goes to see? I would have thought it was Jared, but whenever I pop my head through the door to speak to you, he's perched on your table."
"I know how it might look, but I swear we've never flirted or anything. When he comes, it's always to see Jared, but then Evan and I end up laughing about something or other. I think he just finds it easy to talk to me, because unlike every other woman in the Hollow, I don't mistake it for flirting and then try it on with him." For some reason, Evan had rejected every girl who showed interest in him, but he always turned them down gently. He was sweet in spite of the cockiness. Quite the opposite of his brother in that respect. One thing that really impressed me about him was that although his twin brother had been made heir and was highly thought of and involved in absolutely everything, Evan wasn't a bit jealous. He had told me that all that stuff wasn't important to him, that he liked being just a commander, and that he thought his brother deserved the attention he received. "You know, I get the feeling that he's a bit lonely sometimes. I can't work out why he seems to prefer it that way."
"Ooh, maybe he's secretly gay," Fletcher crooned, excited.
Then he suddenly sobered.
"Oh, love, please don't tell Norm about the ooh. He'll kill me."
I chuckled.
"I'll take it to the grave."
"You're immortal. What grave?"
He picked up another of the NSTs, a curry-flavored one, and eyed it suspiciously.
"Why is it that this looks more like a burst abscess?"
Again, I laughed. And that was pretty much how the evening with Fletcher went. I couldn't help but absolutely adore the bloke. Every home should have a Fletcher.
Chapter 8. Jared. Although Joy was whispering something in my ear about plans for tonight, involving chocolate mousse, handcuffs, and a whip, my eyes were on Sam. I guess that Joy's loud whispering was for Sam's benefit. She felt threatened by Sam, I now knew, which was why she persistently appeared at the office. I had to wonder if Joy's mention of a whip was just to ensure that she got Sam the Whip Queen's attention. If Joy had succeeded, Sam wasn't showing it. She was at her desk staring at the documents in front of her, looking completely engrossed in what she was reading. She was twining a stray strand of her hair around her finger, reminding me of the time when I had my fingers in that hair. Her other hand was cupping her neck as she leaned her head into it, reminding me of the time when I was leaving a trail of kisses along that neck. She was running her tongue along the inside of her bottom lip, reminding me of how that tongue had knotted with mine, and how those lips had felt on mine. She was a greedy kisser, and I'd loved it. The gentle rise and fall of her chest as she breathed was repeatedly drawing my attention to her cleavage, which was already accentuated enough by that low-cut vest. God bless Fletcher and his clothing advice. Every time she twirled her ankle, my attention drifted to those legs that had felt so good curled around me. She could have no idea how much she, by doing nothing, was making me want her. I almost hated her for it. Hating her would be a good thing. She was the only woman ever to make me feel bad about myself. As soon as I'd calmed down after our fight, I'd wanted to slap myself. She hadn't meant that thing about her sire the way it had come out. I knew that. But I'd been an ass to her, and I regretted it. Would I tell her that? No. Pride and all that. It was stupid that I'd accused her of having a thing for my brother. She hadn't. I knew that. But it was likely that she now did. Evan was just as bad as Joy for coming to the office all the time. Sam and he would then always end up talking. He always seemed to have something to say to her. It felt like I was being sliced at every time I watched her laugh at something he said, or greet him with that big smile, which she had never once shown me. Because of that, I liked that Joy came to the office. This way, both Sam and I felt awkward sometimes. She could pretend to be engrossed in those documents all she wanted, just as she always did. But I'd bet she was well aware of everything that Joy said and did. The night when Joy had brought along Daniela and Tammy hadn't been a good night for me. I knew seeing the three of them would remind Sam of just why she had refused me, would make her conclude that she had made the right decision. I'd been hoping that in time she would come to change her mind, open her eyes more to the idea of what I'd offered. If she had, the three of them turning up together like sisters would have canceled that right out. Because Sam was right. She could never be a part of anything like that. She was more than that. I respected her for it. I wanted her for it. I almost hated her for it. It was always that I almost hated her. I could never get past the wanting her. Could never shake her off. Could never find anything about her that made me want her less. The wanting was quickly becoming aching. I didn't want to be like this anymore. Constantly thinking about and wanting someone that I couldn't have, but who my soul seemed to think was mine. Christ, now she was making it worse. She had left her chair and was stretching up to reach the top shelf of one of the filing cabinets, returning some documents. Her top had risen up and the small of her back was showing, flashing me some kind of swirly tattoo. To make it even worse, but at the same time better, I could see the top of her panties. Red silk with a band of lace at the top. I was seriously at risk of becoming painfully hard. Hey, bro! Oh, great. Evan's here. I nodded briefly. It was all I could manage, because I knew what was coming next. Hey, coach! He greeted Sam, grinning. Most of the commanders were calling her that now, though they said it as a pet name, whereas the recruits said it with an air of respect. She had come a long way with them, completely turned things around. Her head swiveled, revealing that smile that she always had for him. I wished I could say that I thought she did it to get a rise out of me. But it was so obvious that the smile was authentic. All right, Ev. I stiffened. I wasn't sure why it got to me so much when she abbreviated his name like that. Joy seemed much more relaxed now that he was here. No prizes for guessing why. She loosened her hold on my neck, but I still felt like I had a chimp hanging off my body. Evan stood by Sam's desk, tapping it with his fingers.
I was hoping you'd still be here.
She seemed just as surprised by that as I was. He had never come specifically to see her before. I won't lie. I wanted to punch him.
I'm just leaving for the arena, she said apologetically, as she returned to the desk and tidied the pile of papers on it.
Actually, that's why I'm here. I was thinking I could come along and watch. I'll sit in the spectator's box out of the way, and I won't say a word. I swear.
Aren't you working with your own squad?
I decided to give them half the evening off because it's one of the guys' birthdays.
You're too sweet. Did she want me to punch her, too? I said I'd let mine leave early if, and only if, they did good. Why the sudden interest in my squad?
Well, it turns out that, some pranks have been getting played on the other squads, particularly mine. The guys swear it's payback from your squad, that a certain telekinetic individual called Harvey was responsible. But I thought they can't possibly be right about that, because you've only been training Harvey for, like, a week.
Huh. Weird.
There was just as much humor in her voice as in his.
And now, I'm all curious. So, can I?
His grin was charming. He'd get his way.
All right. But I need a favor from you.
He shrugged.
Whatever you want.
I'd like to borrow your squad sometime to spar with mine. It won't be for another week.
Do you think they'll really be ready for that?
Well, you can decide that for yourself, can't you?
I couldn't bring myself to say anything to his,
later bro,
or her,
see you later.
At least, not anything that wouldn't be a threat, curse, or insult. Sam? Hell. I hadn't even meant to call her. The last time I had spoken telepathically to her was when I saw Max flirting with her at the pool. I wasn't expecting a response now, just like I hadn't then, especially since she had continued walking out of the office.
Yep.
Forced friendliness. Now I was going to have to come up with a reason why I had called her. I'll be coming to watch too.
I'm surprised you haven't sooner. They're your recruits as well.
Joy grinned at me.
It's only a matter of time.
What?
That's if they're not already.
I sighed. Joy, when have I ever liked riddles?
I was saying it's only a matter of time before those two get together.
A blazing heat of half anger, half panic shot through me, and I felt like I'd explode. No, I couldn't let that happen. I couldn't let them be together. If she was to ever be with Evan for even one night, there would never be any chance of there ever being anything between Sam and me. I couldn't be with someone for even one night who had been with my brother. Too weird for me. And the idea of there never being a chance sparked a dull ache in me. All this over a goddamn fuck?
Are we going now?
Said Joy sweetly. You are. I've got somewhere I need to be. I moved so fast around the table that she lost her monkey grip on me.
Where are you going?
Why don't you get the chocolate mousse ready? I suggested in an irritated voice. Not that I had any intention of following her up there.
It's chocolate ice cream!
Oh. Turned out I'd been paying even less attention to her than I'd thought. That too. I went at vampire speed to the arena, expecting to see Sam and Evan along the way. But it seemed that they had traveled at vampire speed too. I joined Evan in the front row of the spectators' box. He had his arms folded and a hand holding his chin, intensely interested. So was I, but only in Sam.
Hey, bro. I didn't know you were coming.
I only nodded at him. He sighed.
Jared, I could be wrong, but I could swear that I'm supposed to have done something. And if I have, I truly have no idea what it is.
I forced a mini smile and patted his back. I've got a lot on my mind right now. That was true. The upcoming attack on the Hollow's walls wasn't something that just slipped from your brain.
I'm guessing that it's mostly Sam.
No, I denied. Squad stuff.
Yeah, right.
He shook his head, grinning, before returning his attention to the scene below us. Sam was pacing in front of the guys, who were all stood side by side in an almost perfectly straight line. None of them were smirking or fidgeting or whistling, which was more than I could say for when they were training with me. Even Damien was focused. Wow. She ran a pretty tight ship. It was when she said the first few words that I realized exactly what they were focusing so much on doing.
Sam. Harvey, there's a tiny bit of excess energy around you. Suck it in, I said.
Yes, coach.
His expression was aggravated, as always. Harvey still hadn't rid himself of his arrogant streak, so he always got touchy whenever he was singled out for one reason or another. For once, however, he didn't grunt before doing as I'd asked. I took that as progress. It was a case of baby steps with Harvey. Last session, you each met your goal of channeling all your energy. That's an achievement, but it's not yet the time to do a sing and dance about it unless you can channel all that energy under pressure. During an attack, you won't be in a nice, quiet arena, secure in your safety, with me right here to tell you if you're doing it right. You'll be out in the open, you'll be surrounded by stimuli, you'll have enemies hunting you down, and you'll have me to answer to if you don't move your ass. They each smiled at the latter part, knowing better than to laugh. This was a serious matter, and they were expected to treat it seriously. So here's where we get a hint of just how well you'll do. Tonight, we'll be doing two exercises. The first will involve me testing you all individually to see how well and how quickly you can respond to an oncoming threat. I'm sure you'll all be pleased to know that I will be that threat, I added, to which they smiled. I know you'll definitely be pleased to hear that I don't want you to just defend. I want you to attack. Enthusiasm seeped out of every one of them. They wanted desperately to let go and abuse those powers. Boys and their toys. A few of them suddenly noticed that the spectators' box wasn't empty tonight. I guess that there must have been some movement from up there. Yes, yes, you have observers. Get over it. Note that my intention in this exercise isn't to hurt you and see how well you can ignore the pain. We'll leave that for another night. More smiles. During this exercise, all I'm interested in is your reaction to an attack. Only if I can be sure that you're handling your gifts as you need to can we move on to the second exercise. All that understood? Yes, coach, they shouted soldier style. Dramatic, but whatever. I thought that they were probably showing off to Evan and Jared. I could swear that Jared's eyes were on me. I had to expel that thought from my mind before becoming self-conscious and losing focus here. But it was hard, especially when only minutes ago he'd spoken to me telepathically, for the first time in days. Funny how you don't realize you ever liked something until all of a sudden it happened when you weren't expecting it. Locking out Jared for now, I moved at vampire speed toward the southern wall, stopping just short of 5 feet. Letting my body feel part of the ground beneath me, as though my feet were roots of a tree, I stood firm and sucked in the natural energy of the earth. Ready, I then stamped twice with one foot, directly to energy to shape itself in the form of a decent-sized boulder, which suddenly rose in front of me. It was big, sturdy, and bulky enough for each one of them to individually hide behind it, one at a time, even tall David. Returning to my spot near to the northern wall, I repeated the action, creating myself an almost identical boulder. I then randomly called out a name.
Harvey!
Coach!
He seemed eager for this. Harvey was eager during most exercises, but not so much enthusiastic. It was that he wanted to prove himself, prove that he didn't need as much coaching as the others did. But all he proved time and time again was what I was already telling him. He was not ready to take on the world yet. But Harvey could nonetheless be reckless and arrogant, which meant he was not the best team player. If he could only get past that, I could properly consider the ideas that he was full of. But until then, as I said before, it was a case of baby steps with him. I want you to go to that boulder over there. I gestured with my head to the one at the southern point. Use it as cover when you need it, but don't hide behind it. Remember, I want you to attack and defend, but the intention isn't for anyone to be hurt. Oh, and nobody moves from the boulder unless I allow it. Harvey wiggled his head as if loosening any tension in his neck, making his black, silky hair dance around.
Sure thing, coach.
However, behind that childlike grin laid a hint of mischief. His reckless side might just manifest here. If he believed that hurting me would make him seem power-tastic, that would be exactly what he would do. Then I'd have to twat him. After I'd ushered the others to gather in the corner of the wall behind me, both Harvey and I stood behind our boulder. Wiggling my fingers, I drew in the energy surrounding me, especially the natural energies, and held it in reserve, feeling it thrash about like a caged animal struggling to get free. I then reached out with my enhanced hearing, listening for any movement from Harvey. He was fidgeting crazily. Wouldn't be a good thing in combat, as he'd be sounded out immediately. Harvey, keep your movements to a minimum, remember? Instead, I've something to prove Harvey attacked first, striving to move the boulder with his telekinesis. Idiot. Did he really think I'd build something flimsy? Converting some of the absorbed energy into my beloved silvery blue whip, I, in the swiftest movement, let half of my body peek around the boulder and cracked the whip at Harvey. He cried out, cursing. Don't be a whelp. I didn't whip you hard, I called out. But I will whip you senseless if you don't give up trying to move the boulder and come up with something else. Come on, where are all those ideas of yours? I listened for him again. No movement. Wow, he'd actually listened to me. I enjoyed the sizzling in my hands as I converted the whip into an energy ball. Vampire swift again, I peeked around, only long enough to fling the ball at the boulder, before then retreating behind my own. I knew perfectly well what Harvey would do in response. Sure enough, he used his telekinesis to deviate the energy ball. It crashed into my boulder, but the mound didn't crumble. Oh, come on, you can do better than that, I told him. Stop trying to attack the boulder. That's not what has the power to fling at you. If an enemy is really that intent on finding cover, they'll simply find something else if you do manage to damage their cover. Again, I threw an energy ball. But this time I kept an eye on Harvey. I then watched as he levitated the ball up into the air and then sent it zooming down, hoping to catch me behind the boulder. Instantly I called on my energy shield, which made the ball rebound and hit the wall. Better, I told him, as I held up a hand as a gesture that the exercise was over. We both then came out from behind our boulder.
Oh, coach, I was just getting into it, he complained.
Sorry, but I've got 9 other people to get through before we can move on to the next exercise. Did you not want to get out of the session early tonight? His frown was replaced by a grin.
You'll really let us?
I already told you that I will, if you all do good. David, you're next. As I'd expected, David did excellently. He waited patiently for his chance and then peeked out and sent a psionic blast from his fingertips. My shield stopped the blast before it got to me. He was extremely pleased with himself because the nervousness that he had originally felt while handling his gift not knowing exactly how to control the strength of the blast, had all but gone. I knew that, because the youngest had done so well at the exercise, all the other recruits would now try harder, not wanting the youngest to do better than them. I then challenged Salem.